on the second last in the zone. Thunderdome's here to recap the season gone, and we talk about the semi-finals and the grand final coming up. We also recap the under-20s game against Qatar and talk about the Chatham Cup. All that, but plenty of thunder. In the Zone 166. Right, welcome to In The Zone 166, the penultimate In The Zone. We've just decided, actually. Just before we started recording, we've just decided. Next week's the last week, so dry your eyes. We've got a special guest today, and I don't mean special in the learning needs sense. Domi, welcome back.
A little learning needs special, Smitty. Not too much. Thanks for having me back.
No, good to have you here again in the about the 19th pod studio that we've had. We are going to talk a lot with you shortly about all things Phoenix, but first let's cover off all things semi-final. Sydney run rampant over Adelaide, absolutely hammered them.
Yeah, I think the scoreline probably flattered Sydney quite a bit given how the first half went, where Sydney managed to score twice and Adelaide managed to fluff a number of good opportunities. Once the third goal went in, I think the writing was on the wall. But yeah, I think Sydney probably, on the balance of it, deserve it. I mean, they came really strongly in the last half of the season, finished second, and it just goes to show you what a great advantage of finishing in the top two is. You know, you're one home win away from a grand final, and they took full advantage of it.
There were some pretty tidy goals in the Sydney four.
Yeah, there was. I think the second goal of Brosk, little back heel just before half time.
Was that the little cheeky one?
I think so. Yeah, I believe it was. Yeah, going to half two, no, was probably just about done the tie after that.
You'd have saved that. Surely. Glikovic near post. Six yards out he was.
Yeah, body weight going the other direction. I'm not an A-League keeper, so probably not.
Anyway, Sydney far too strong for Adelaide there, despite what Boxy reckons about the first half. And the other game, of course, the Friday night game, victory way too strong for City, which I think everyone expected. I mean, victory looked like the winning side, and they sort of have all season.
Again, I think the scoreline probably not quite as indicative of how things were on the pitch for much of the game. Similar pattern in that victory was 2-0 up at halftime, just the way Sydney were over Adelaide. But again, it wasn't as if City weren't in the game. I mean, Taylor had a fantastic game, pulled off three or four absolutely cracking saves. Victory, again, well-deserved. I mean, they have been the best team in the competition the whole season, so it's really no great shock that they managed to pull out the win in the end. I thought City put up a good fight, but realistically, they were never really going to go and win that game.
I guess we have to reserve special mention for Costa's goal. Ripper.
Yeah, it was a nice volley from not much of... I mean, he had a bit of room, but the flight of the ball sort of cramped the swing of his leg, and he connected it reasonably well. Bit of a slight little shank off the side of the boot, but it went top corner. It was fairly tidy finish from him.
He was involved in quite a lot of their other good play as well, though, wasn't he? Was involved in the build up to one of the others. It's been pretty impressive for them all season when he's been fit.
He's so busy, isn't he? He's so busy.
I was talking about this the other day. He's been given a bit of the Moss treatment when he was at Victory. Like, a lot of people hating on him at various stages, and Muscat's continued to play him, and I guess towards the back end, he's really come. I think he started well and then had a bit of a dip at mid-season, and then has really come back towards the back end of the season quite strong, and has looked really, really good as one of the top players in the league.
Muscat Coach of the Year at the A-League End of Season Awards. Fair, you reckon? Good decision?
Based on their position and what they've achieved this year, yes, but they've really, really got the cattle for it. You know, they've got Berisha, Kalfala. You know, it's pretty easy to win with a squad, Costa. It's pretty easy to win when you've got
big,
a squad.
They've got a really big bunch of salary.
Yeah. You know, they use their salary.
Somehow they managed to fit all that salary under that
big cap.
I don't know how they managed to do that.
I probably would have gone with Arnie. I mean, you look at when Arnie took over that Sydney side. I mean, they were a mess.
I totally agree.
Absolute mess. When Muscat took over, I think halfway through last season, wasn't it, I think, you know, they had Ange before him to do all the cleaning up that they had to have. And he sort of just carried that on, whereas I think Arnie actually turned around a club that was
in a pile of shit.
Yeah, totally.
And the other thing in Arnie's advantage is that around that Asian Cup, they lost a huge number of players injured, and the way he's found the replacements and integrated those replacements in the squad and the way they play, I think, needs some credit as well.
Another very good harvester of celery.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Really good.
Yeah, you would think so.
Exceptional celery.
I would think that, you know, there's a lot of celery being eaten by Yanko. He loves celery.
He's a big fan of the salad, I think, yeah. Certainly more of a fan than you are. Anyway, so Muskie Coach of the Year, I'd have given it either to Arnie or just to Phil Stubbins for the sheer comedy of what he did to Newcastle Jets. Anyway, so that sets up a final, Big Blue final. There have been some ripper Big Blues, a couple of 5-0s in the history. So what do we see happening this weekend? Big blowout or tightly contested arrangement?
I think there might be quite a few goals in it, but I don't know that I'd be brave enough to call it one way or the other. I think Victory will win it.
I reckon it'll be a draw at the end of ordinary time.
Yeah?
Yep. I reckon you're right. I reckon it'll be 2-2 or something. Yeah. There'll be goals in it, definitely. But I think it'll be reasonably tight.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Victory have the best squad in the league, and they will go into the game as big favourites, but they are very vulnerable defensively and certainly have pace, and they also have finishing quality that can really, really hurt them. So I actually wouldn't be surprised if Sydney managed to pull it out.
TAB have got draw 1-1 as the favourite score, 6.50. Melbourne 1-0 is your next favourite at 8.5. Melbourne definitely favourites to win at $1.60 versus $2.25, which I think is pretty fair.
What about the total goals? Is there any odds going on that?
There definitely are, and I didn't write them down. So get yourself onto tab.co.nz or the TAB app on your phone, Dale.
Something like over threes.
Bet responsibly, though.
Over threes, I think, probably a good option, yeah.
Domi, you care to take a punt at who's going to win and how?
Victory, 100%.
In ordinary time?
Yeah, I can't see. It's in front. It's in Melbourne. I mean, I know it's in a small ground, but there will be.
Come on to that in a minute.
Yeah, they will be going for Victory. I mean, they can't get on. Sydney guys can't get ticket prices. Can't get tickets without paying exorbitant prices. But I think they'll swamp them in the midfield. They've got so much pace, Victory, and they'll get in behind them. You know, I don't think that that Tavares and the other, his cousin, will do the job well enough to keep people like Barbarossa out. You're talking about. He's been quality. He's got so much pace going forward. Player for player, Victory's got the better squad, no doubt.
Outspoken former Terry Serapisos secretary Tony Pinata has claimed that it's a disgrace that the AFL won't move out of Etihad, and so the grand final's going to be played at 33,000 seat Amy Park, which actually makes me wonder if the FFA are going to have a word with Melbourne Victory about getting shit crowds to big games,
yeah,
like they did us.
Yeah.
Because they signed a shit TV deal.
Yeah,
they signed a shit ground booking deal, so I wonder if that's Melbourne Victory's fault. Anyway, I digress.
Eddie Maguire's popped back at Tony Pinata as well, hasn't he, on behalf of AFL? As
slightly larger profile, Eddie Maguire, too, to be fair. Yeah. I like Tony P a lot, but Eddie Maguire trumps him.
Good for race relations, Eddie Maguire. He should jump right in there with his a comment on that. Would be good.
Pinata, though, adamant that the AFL should have moved. That was never going to happen, was it? Why would you? They're head-to-head competitors. Why would you move out of the way?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tony Pinata would absolutely never relinquish a booking that he had for the greater benefit of the Sydney Swans.
No, that's right.
No chance.
No.
Anyway, so it's going to be at Amy, and it sounds like people are struggling to get tickets, and it's going to be absolutely jam-packed, and when the flares go off, it's going to be hilarious.
Mm.
And coins in the seats and bottles come rain down from the tier above as well.
It's going to be glorious. It'll be just like being back home, Boxy. Nostalgic tear to the eye. and a ridiculous situation where Melbourne had 52,000 at their semi-final, but I only have 33,000 at the grand final.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Anyway, well played, the FFA.
How have they bollocked booking it?
Wasn't it to do with the Asian Champions League dates not getting confirmed until quite late? And so that had to push a number of A-League fixtures back.
And all these stadia, same as in New Zealand, all the stadia in Australia have priority bookings for AFL. So AFL go in and book all the points, all the venues they want to up front. And this is a very good reason for them to move out you know, no game should do on something like that if they take second fiddle.
It's very easy for AFL to do that, right, because they're a totally an enclosed ecosystem. Australia, and they do whatever they like.
Yeah, and their draw tends to be finalised much, like Dale was saying, their draw tends to be finalised a lot earlier because they don't have Asian Cup and they don't have this national windows and all that sort of stuff. So,
but what's his name? Disco Damien came out and said that they're going to announce the grand final dates like tomorrow for next year. So that this doesn't happen again.
Yeah. Dale's right. It was much harder this year because of Asian Cup. But without that out of the way, I mean, they really want it on the same day every year. So without any of those
grand specials, final day.
That's right. Yeah, right. They love that.
Beautiful. Okay, thanks. Well, that's the final wrapped up. The Johnny Warren medal, I suppose, is worthy of mention, seeing as Russ put out a press release, even though he sounds like he's on holiday, Russ. He sent out his thanks and see you next season, and then he sent out a press release. Yeah. Burnsy won the Johnny Warren medal. We're not going to be able to afford to keep him, are we, Damey?
Well, hang on, what do you want to talk about first? Him winning the Johnny Warren medal or keeping Burnsy?
Well, he definitely won the Johnny Warren medal. Any comment on that?
I think it was outstanding. You saw the voting throughout the year. He obviously killed it in the first half of the year when he was banging in goals.
A bit like us. We killed it the first half of the year too.
Well, a bit of a relationship there.
Snakes on those.
Bit of correlation.
How does that translate to his desirability to other clubs?
You know, you're right. It probably does. You know, there's lots of examples of a Johnny Warren medal going overseas the year after they win it. You know, at the moment, there's no offer for Burnsy on the table. And it hasn't been for quite some time since the middle window, the summer window. Ernie wants him to stay. Everyone wants him to stay. It's really just a case of, you know, who's going to come out of the woodwork and say, look, we're going to pay big bucks for him to move. And, you know, we'll just cross that bridge when it comes to it. I mean, Burnsy said he realises that it's, you know, Ernie helped him reinvent his career and turn him around and turn him into an out-and-out striker. You know, he's done the international thing before. It didn't work that well for him. So I think he's sort of made back of his mind if he goes and he ends up in Korea or China again, he's going to rot on a bench and not play for soccer.
When he was asked after the Johnny Warren medal, though, and he said, are you going to be another year at the Phoenix? He said, I don't know yet.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I think that's fair.
Yeah, honest. It's very honest.
Yeah, I think that was interpreted as him saying he's gone, whereas I think it was more, you know, I've got a deal. If someone comes in, I'm gone. You know, I think it was kind of spun in a way to make it sound like he was gone, which wasn't the impression I got once I heard the actual
quote. No, I think he was just being honest. I think he just said, I don't know. I don't know.
It's the same with any player. If someone came in for a, you know, $2 million bid for Ben Sigmund, I'm sure he'd go. You know, it's the same principle for any player. That's how transfer works in the world.
And he'll weigh it up when it comes in. He'll say, look, you know, if I'm going to get paid twice as much, is that worth it? Or do I want to be a socceroo? Is it, you know, 25% as much? You know, it's... like I say, there's no off on the table, so there's nothing to talk about.
So we don't know if we're going to have any players next year?
No, quite right.
Right, you heard it here first.
No, we had a season debrief with the players last week, and Ernie stood up into that and he said, look, you know, when I first came in, I had to say signing was 11 or 13 players. This year, you know, it was 3 or 4. And next year going to the next window, it could be, or next off season, it's only probably going to be 2, depending on what happens with Burnsy, maybe 3.
Yeah, no, there was discussion a little bit earlier on, you know, a few weeks ago, I think Rob, in his magnificent interview with Simon Hill.
Yeah,
God, that was good. Yeah. I still have to read it every now and again just to lift the spirits.
Bad day at work, break out
What was the vibe around the office when you read that in the morning?
But did you wake up in the morning, read that on your phone and
just start clapping?
Or just roll over and bang the missus? Like, it was just, just magnificent.
I don't know what to say to that. No.
That's what she said.
Rob did a good job. I mean, the good thing when Rob sits out, you know, talks down with someone, and Simon Hill's he's a friend of the club, you know. So there was no agenda there except that he wanted to get the viewpoint out. And Rob just sort of put it on the line. It was great. And, you know, being the chairman and owner of a club, you can do that.
He says what he wants.
So do we have a marquee?
Do we have a marquee?
Yeah, it's Burns.
Right. I'm sure the club has previously said that we don't have marquee.
Well, look. There's
things we say and then there's things we say.
Yeah, and there's a marquee and there's a marquee. We don't have Yanko as a marquee. We don't have I don't know what he's on, let's say 1.5 million.
Big bushels of celery.
That's right. We don't have one of those. But we have a marquee because when you come to do your salary cap, you put one of those salaries outside so that you don't have to get pinged for being over the cap. And that's a marquee.
Excellent. So we've had a marquee every season?
No. Didn't need them.
Spending so little money, it didn't even matter.
Yeah.
In fact, they were thinking of putting Domi under the cap so that they met the minimum.
Yeah. Have we ever done anything like that? We ever put someone on as a player who, like Gouldie, I guess, was on as a player at some stage because we needed an extra number or in the dark days?
Josh Schmidt.
you should get.
Yeah, no, you're right. Gordy was on the bench.
James McPeak was on the bench for 4 days, remember?
That's right.
For international
duty. I think if we've ever...
Did we have Stu Jacobs on the team sheet or anything?
No. Gordy was the closest one.
Crikey.
In management.
Back in the day.
I think we got close with Greeny one time when he was... Might have had looked at him.
Classic. Anyway,
from Masters 1 to the A-League.
So we've got a bunch of... As we enter the Dome Zone part of the pod, we've got a bunch of questions to ask you. I'm going to let the boys sort of take turns. Dale, do you want to start off?
Next year, obviously you've put season passes on sale already, and it's mentioned there you're going to have two away games. I guess where might they be? I guess in Auckland.
Yeah.
And?
Christchurch.
Yeah, that's bad news.
Is that because of the agreement you guys got with them down there?
Yeah, it's good. It's good for the club in terms of dollars. It's one less home game we have to worry about trying to break even, so it's a good deal. And you know, it's another part of the country we can take the club to.
What sort of kit are we looking at next year? Get a new kit release?
Yeah, looks good.
Is it? Mm. You give us what can you give us?
It's a shirt.
I
heard it was stripey, like not actually stripey.
It's stripey-ish. Is that good enough?
I don't know. What?
It's going to have
stripey-ish.
It's going
to be a great marketing tagline, isn't it? It's stripey-ish.
It'll be yellow and black, and it will be it's. Not exactly. I mean, we've gone pretty conservative with our strips over the years. They've kind of, you know, we went to the stripe. It's remained the stripe for a long time and a little bit smoothed. This one's a little bit more...
new.
Edgy.
Is this a new number one kit?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah,
new number one. I'm kit. Uncomfortable with change, Domi.
Yeah, I'm not big with edgy and strips. You can't go wrong with
stripes. Have you taken elements out of the horrific Hobbit strip?
It was white.
Flames on it.
No.
Good, no flames. What else?
No hobbits in this strip. No.
Have we gone adventurous with the away kit? You know, maybe all pink or something like that?
No.
Okay.
Away kit is not a million miles different. It's good, though. It's good. Personally, I think that both of them are improvements, but everybody has their own taste.
You used to play for a club that plays in orange and blue. I'm not sure that your taste is what we should be judging it on.
That club's Wellington Phoenix now. Yeah, it's not even a club anymore. It used to be a club. Former club.
Is it, so it's standard template, like a normal template? You're not getting a personalised design?
Is it an Adidas standard?
Yeah.
There's levels of Adidas standards. So there is that team wear. It's not team wear. So it is, but it is follows international guidelines. So Adidas, when they do their strips, they kind of all move in one direction. So all the clubs all around the world who are Adidas clubs, they have sort of elements of the same sort of design. So we're part of that.
I heard Thomas Benn gave the AOK today. I hope he didn't launch a grenade as he walked out the door.
Yeah. It's going to have New World all over it. What else? What else do we have to ask? I had a kit-related question, and it's now gone out of my head.
Waving to
that's it. Now we had a contractual agreement that that you would let Yellow Fever go on the sleeve if you hadn't filled it by the end of the last four games, I think, of the season.
No,
regular
season. Game. I think we said the last
game. See, it was the last game, so you acknowledged that the agreement was in place, and then we were waiting with bated breath.
Yeah,
actually, my breath smelled of Pinot to see what would be on the sleeve at that last game, and out they came nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
So you've. It's terrible.
We've even done the artwork. We're going to be able to see that.
So what I think you need to do to make this up to us.
Oh, here we go.
Is put Yellow Fever on the sleeve of the strip for the game you're playing at Capri Coast in 2 months' time.
We haven't booked that one in yet, have we? You know something more might be.
I was trying to get you on the hook with two things at once.
Oh, we like playing Cavity Coast. They're all right.
Are you
going
to do it?
Yeah, we like going out there. Okay. It's good. It's a good pre-season.
You've got to get us on the. You're now retiring one set of shirts, so you might as well get us on the sleeve when you retire them.
Yeah.
What about on training shirt? All season training shirt.
Yeah.
This particular commercial spot value you are referring to has been it's been sold. And the reason it should have been on that in that last game. In fact, it should have been through all the finals and in the last game. But the particular company that we're looking to place on its sleeve is just taking a little bit longer to confirm than we would have thought that they would have going to take.
So calendar girls.
We kept it open for as long as we could. I guess that's what I'm trying to say is we kept it open and kept it open. It's going to happen, it's going to happen. It just didn't get done in time.
We were ready to move, Tony.
I was starting to wonder if Domi had, in fact, taken the sleeve sponsorship and to claim that there was a sleeve sponsor so he didn't have to put the fever on.
Or any of the owners.
Yeah.
Henry wrote a check. Do not do it.
Sponsored by a yellow circle.
Yellow on a yellow background. We actually really liked the idea. I thought it was a great idea, and we were really keen to do it. Because
this is like, do you know what this sounds like? It sounds like it's not you, it's me.
Yeah, it's a divorce. No, but I don't know as far as, you know, it's certainly never been done in the A-League, but I don't know if it's been done anywhere in the world, but to have a fan group on the sleeve was a great idea.
Shit, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought people would have...
Next season then, lock it in. Offer's still on the table. Okay, dokes. Moving swiftly on, the next season now. What are our priorities? You know, Ernie's in Europe scouting for players. You know, we got particular recruiting targets that we're after.
Yeah.
What do we think we can do next year in terms of going one better?
Yeah. So Ernie's pretty comfortable with who he's got. He wants another striker, a proven goal scorer, and another centre back. That's what he's been on record saying that. Now, if Burnsy goes, he's going to want two strikers. So he felt like he's got enough up front there, but he needed someone who was going to, you know, I said to him the other day, you know, someone like, you know, Greeny, when he was in the top of his form, would have been a perfect foil for Burnsy. You know, he would have been sniffing around the box, knocking on board. And that's what actually we bought Griff for Brent Griffiths, but poor bugger did his ACL.
Speaking of sniffing around the box, when did the Michael Boxall deal get done?
I see it's in the paper today, but, you know, we put an offer onto the table to him back in, I think it was January or February. He turned it down or didn't want to sign it. He wanted to think about it. So Ernie's way is right. Okay, here's the offer. You don't want to take it.
Did you offer him first team wages? Like, are we talking starting 11 wages?
Yeah. I mean, look, he wasn't going to be the highest earner in the club, but he wasn't the cheapest one either.
Wow.
He was a squad player. I mean, he was a squad player. And I think, to be fair, he'd probably worked his way up.
But isn't he more important than that? Like, wasn't he a succession plan? I think that's why people grieve his going is because, you know, he's the obvious successor to Siggy and Jura, who are not getting younger.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the part of it was that we put on the table what we thought was a fair offer and what we valued him at. And, you know, that comes from Ernie's experience and Gilly's history that he does and all the research he does. And Boxy obviously got, to be honest, Boxy got a much bigger offer from South Africa. We couldn't compete with it. So he didn't want to take the offer. And I didn't even know about the SuperSport one until I saw it in the media because he doesn't have to tell us because he had a contract. So, you know, fair play. Got a much better deal.
It's a shame, though. It's a shame for us because now we need to reinvent our succession planning for those two centre-back spots.
But Ernie's pretty advanced on that.
Do you think he's going to, when you say Ernie's pretty advanced, is he going to replace one of the existing centre-backs or is he getting someone up and coming to be an understudy to them?
Yeah, I think the next season he's comfortable with both Jura and Siggy, where they're at. And they both had good years this year, really good years. And I think he's looking for, I mean, he's, you know, the couple of guys he's looking at are really good young players who will be, you know, quality, and real quality.
Based on the fact that
and any other team would walk into the first team, to be honest.
Based on the fact that he's currently in Europe and we have two import slots, is it fair to assume that the centre back and the striker are the two imports we're looking for?
It's all a bit in the up in the air because it happens with Burnsy. So the thing with the Burnsy ones, it does sort of dictate how we do all the other places. So if Burnsy goes, then we'll probably look. One of them has to be the other striker has to be an international player. And then you're right, the second one will probably be the other centre-back player. Burnsy stays and he's got a few more options up his sleeve.
Got one pork spot.
There's only one, yeah.
Oh, there's only the one?
There's only one.
I thought we had two.
It's only Kenny.
Ah, true. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Dad.
So I guess we do kind of need to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is that the FFA are morons. And we want a license extension. Now, obviously, you can't comment on the first part of that about them being morons.
Or can you?
Do they get this in Australia?
Stop nodding your head, Domi. Moral. If I run through a list of names and any of them that you don't think are morons,
License, so Chairman Rob Morris has worked on that. And he's had, you know, we've said from the start, the FFA want us to, you know, and you guys talk about it all the time. They want more money in New Zealand, blah, 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 blah. It's a basic philosophical standpoint. We think we're 1/10 of the A-League. We should be treated the same.
A good line. We're 1/10 of the A-League. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why we said it. You know, without us, there's one fewer game each round. And there had to be a bye. Anyway, so FFA think that they subsidise New Zealand football. That's their position. They think that's what they do. Now they chuck this money. There's 2.5 million at us each year. And that's since she's paying for all the All Whites, the development of the All Whites. New Zealand football don't see it like that. We don't see it like that, but it is what it is. So we've got to try and, you know, Rob's taken on his own to go, right, well, we have to do something with that, yeah, and they've gone about trying to find some, generate more dollars out of New Zealand.
To be fair, they throw $2.5 million at Newcastle Jets and they're not developing anyone.
Well, there are two key things in that license negotiation, aren't there? There's Sky.
Yeah.
Like, what do we do there?
You can't. I mean, you guys point out all the time, we don't do the Sky negotiation, they do. So Sky have said, and there's no competition in this market.
No, but there was talk at one stage about doing a clever deal to get it free to air and just buying it back off Sky and putting it on.
Yeah, that's right. And all that stuff's on the table. So it's like, how do we generate more dollars out of New Zealand? The obvious one is why we need free to air stuff. And Sky, to the credit, said, look, you know, we're open to the idea, just give us some options. And at the moment, Rob's still working on that stuff and had a look at it.
And the other one is New Zealand football. And are they ever going to make a contribution?
There's probably not to the amount that the FFA want, put it that way. I mean, the FFA want quite a bit of money. And, you know, I've talked to Andy Martin about it a few times. And, you know, I mean, he says, look, the well is dry. There's nothing more. You know, we can't keep on, you can't chuck a lot of money at this thing and expect it to, you know, for us to secure the Phoenix's license.
They've got to pay out all the coaches they sack, which is so some money.
But I think, you know, the stuff that Rob's working on is that they certainly see a role for New Zealand football in that.
What's your relationship with New Zealand football like? I mean, it seemed to improve a great deal when Andy Martin came in and Frank Van Haddam moved on. And now it seems to be increasingly adversarial again with them setting up a competing academy in Auckland and pressuring players not to come to Wellington.
We work quite well in some areas. Like the ASB Premiership stuff's been a huge success, and New Zealand football we had a session on it last week about how we can continue to grow that, because we want a few tweaks and changes to that. We want a team in the ASB Youth. We're on in that competition as well, and they're open to that idea. So it's gone to all the chairs, the other franchises, to get that through. But they work with it. They've got their own constraints. That's the problem. You know, they've got their own constraints, and we don't always see eye to eye on some of the stuff, but I mean, Smithy, you're right. We're streaks ahead of where we were before when we couldn't have a team in the ASB Premiership.
Year up into that. I mean, how's that gone so far? Things you want improved, or
the Premiership one?
Yeah.
Oh, look, we've absolutely wrapped it. Everything we wanted, we got out of it. You know, we had players who were weren't able to play the first team. We're playing in that, and then coming straight into the A League, enabled us to play. I mean, some of these kids coming through, like, you know, James McGarry, you know, they're nowhere out of their depth playing against these older players. That's huge for us as a club. So it ticks a lot of boxes like that. We just want a little bit more freedom to be playing more players down or having more youth in there, which we got a little bit hampered by this year. But, you know, generally overall, no, really good.
Is it likely that some of those kids will get promoted to a youth contract over this winter?
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah, so Ernie's looking at that over the winter period, and he's obviously thinking about that. But there are, you know, especially with the Under-20 World Cup, some of these kids that are in the Under-17 World Cup in Chile as well, I mean, some of these kids, you know, could possibly be on the radar for other clubs. The problem is, as soon as you give them a youth contract, you've got to pay them. And you've got to pay them minimum wage. And they're not cheap. Even the minimum wage is not cheap. So it adds a lot to the bottom line. So, I mean, yeah, ideally, you know, Ernie raves about him. He's got a lot of, you know, he really thinks some of these kids coming through are fantastic. We just got to see how we can make it work. We want to lock some of these guys in, no doubt.
Okay.
There's a rumour bounce around about maybe academy, girls' academy with one of the Wellington schools. Is there anything?
Yep.
Is that likely to happen? Or?
Yep. So we're probably going to go dip our toe in the water that early next year. So the idea is to have a football product. So whereas the academy at Scots is an academy, you know, where it's got the best youth, what we're thinking about doing with the foot school product is making it open, so it's non-selective, and just bringing anybody who wants to join it. And then build the academy on top of that. So we've done it the other way around with the boys. They have the academy, and then we'll bring in the non-selective product underneath it. And with the girls, we might do it the other way around. But even with the non-selective product, we'll still bring in the very best girls. And then obviously that'll lead into the W League license, ideally into a W League license in maybe two seasons.
What's the, the objective of that? Because there's not really any money in that league. What's yours?
It ticks a lot of boxes for us in terms of our partners. You know, we want to build, you know, stronger relationships with other clubs around the world. And it ticks boxes for them, and also ticks boxes for some commercial partners too. So if we want to bring in some additional revenue from commercial partners, it ticks boxes for them to have a girls team, a girls part of the equation. And there's lots of reasons to do it, and it helps, you know, with the New Zealand football. We can get into bed with them a bit more on development of players and those sort of stuff. So, no, it's good. It does make sense. It's a lot cheaper than the men's as well, because the salaries that are paid in the women's W League are a lot lower. So it's more affordable for us in the short term.
All right, very good. There's a thorough Thunderdome interview if ever there was one. We're going to take a wee break. Then we're going to come back and rip through the Chatham Cup in the under-20s. All right, New Zealand football time, and there's a wee bit going on. The under-20s played Qatar, I believe, didn't they, Dale? Okay, played Qatar during the week and had a 2-0 loss. We got in touch with Ian Anderson from the Waikato Times, who was at that game.
All right, thanks for joining us, Ian. It's been a while since we've had you on.
Yeah, not a problem.
So you wandered out to Waikato Stadium to check out the under-20s. Obviously, they had a 2-0 loss against Qatar. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I thought New Zealand were a little bit disappointing, although I think some of their failings, I suppose, I probably expected from. I've seen a fair bit of a number of these players in the ASB Premiership over the last couple of seasons with Wanderers. Obviously, this is a sort of a newer combination with some players coming back from overseas and Australia and the like, and it's not obviously the same side that Darren Bazey has been working with for a couple of years now, but there was a sort of a lack of fluency about them that troubled me a little bit, given that they have been preparing for a couple of years. You know, their passing was a little bit laboured, and there wasn't a lot of time that they spent in possession for long periods of time to build up any sort of pressure on Qatar. And Bazley was talking afterwards, he felt that they resorted a little bit after sort of 20 minutes or so to some long ball stuff, because they were sort of under pressure and getting squeezed on the ball and getting pushed high up the pitch, and that didn't really suit them either. So yeah, it was a little bit disappointing. You couldn't argue with the 2-0 scoreline. I think New Zealand were better in the second half. They put a little bit more pressure on, had a little bit more of the ball, but they didn't create a lot of sort of clear cut scoring chances. There was a lot of crosses into the box and things that were starting to put a bit of pressure on the Qatar keeper in the back four, but not a lot of sort of clear cut opportunities that were created out of, you know, little 1-2s or some quick movement, which like Qatar achieved a lot, especially in the first half.
It seems to be the lack of creative, you know, prowess at the front seems to be quite a running theme for the last sort of 6 months or so. Do you think that's a little bit of concern this close to the World Cup?
Yeah, very much so. And you've probably seen, again, people who have watched the ASB Premiership regularly have probably seen that as well too, with the Wanderers side as well. Not saying that they've been toothless. They've had some good results over those years too. But yeah, there is a sort of a lack of flair. It was interesting to see the last couple of warm-up games, because they played Australia and Panama during the week up in North Harbour, that Alex Rufus starting up front. And again, he kind of played, they kind of played a little sort of like a 4-3-2-1 or a 4-2-3-1 sort of formation with Alex sort of up front by himself. And again, I don't know whether that's the best role for him. It may be a case of using one of your better players in a role that you need him to do so, rather than playing him in his best position when you've got other players, I suppose, like Michael Rydenton, that can play that sort of central midfield pushing forward type of role anyway. And so then maybe just trying to sort of manufacture Alex into a single striker, but he's probably not that type of player. And my concerns are what they've always been with New Zealand youth teams is they just lack that real sort of stunning athleticism that you're going to see at this Under-20 World Cup. There's never been a player, I don't think, that I've seen over many years of watching New Zealand youth teams, and I go back probably 20, 25 years here or so, where you've gone, my goodness, that guy's lightning quick. You know, we just don't have athletes playing football in New Zealand who are those. They go to rugby and they go to rugby league, and we don't have them in football. And that was the case again on Sunday. You know, New Zealand looked laboured trying to beat players, whereas you had this chap playing for Qatar, Afif Akram, little number 7. And the minute he got the ball, he could drop a shoulder and go past players with a sort of the blink of an eye. And there'll be other players from many other teams who can do that. And there's not many players, not any players really, let's be realistic, and that New Zealand side who are going to do that. They look like they're going to be a team that's going to have to battle and be organised and sort of grind out whatever they can.
Was there any players there that stood out for the New Zealand? Was there any player that looked like they were, you know, on par with the Qataris?
Yeah, I think probably Declan Wynne was probably the standout who captained the side. It's interesting, he's really sort of not come from nowhere in the last year or two, but he really has made a major step up, hasn't he? You know, Anthony Hudson's got him into the national all-white setup as well too. So he played at left back, and was strong defensively, strong athletically, and nice and comfortable on the ball. He's got a good left foot and looks to go forward when he can, defends well. So he's a quality player. But again, I think, you know, that's where our best players are going to be our defenders, and that's probably going to say a lot about sort of how they might fare during the tournament. Darren Bazley was a little bit disappointed in how they defended individually, which is probably right. I thought the first goal Qatar scored was just a nice goal where they broke quite quickly down the left-hand side and then just played a nice little 1-2 in behind the defence and a nice finish. The second goal was certainly an individual error, a player just switching off from a throw and a guy being able to turn him along the byline and square it across goal to an unknown player. So there's things there that I'm sure Bazley feels like he can improve on, and he'll have a side, you know, very well organised. But it's just a matter of whether they're going to be able to match the best. And as you said, you know, Qatar are a good side, well organised with some good players, but you know, they're going to come up against some even better players probably in their group as well.
And it looked like there was a pretty good turnout based on a couple of photos I saw. Do you get a sense that the sort of interest is building in the World Cup up there?
It wasn't bad in terms of your problem, of course, is you look down and you see, you know, so many empty seats, and you're looking at one side of Waikato Stadium to the other, and there's no one on the other side. But then you sort of have to realise it's a 25,000 seat stadium, and so, you know, if you've got 10,000 people in there, it can look kind of empty at times. So there was a few thousand there, and hardcore football fans for a game that, you know, it's not massively publicised. It was a warm up match. It was a friendly. There was free entry, but there wasn't anything in it for either side apart from, you know, just get a bit of match practice as well too. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. I think the organiser are a little bit optimistic in terms of their ticket targets probably. You know, New Zealand sports fans are remarkably fickle, depending on weather and you know, the tournament's being televised on TV. Whether they'll get the numbers they're looking for, I don't know, but the hardcore football fans will turn up. I think people will be not pleasantly surprised, but people will be pleased with the standard of football they're going to see. There will be some fantastic footballers at this tournament, and there will be some really good matches as well too.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time and that intel, and hope it all goes according to plan up in Hamilton for you guys.
Yeah, looking forward to the rest of the tournament starting. It's going to be some very, very good football, and you know, people have heard over the previous tournaments that the quality of players that have come through here, and it's nice to be able to look back in sort of, you know, 10 or 15 years' time and think that you'd see some of these players in action up close and wide.
Sounds like they're fully aligned, Dale, that line being a line right up the middle of the pitch.
Very direct line.
Very direct line, yeah. anyway, they've got two more games coming up against Honduras on Thursday and against Austria on Sunday. Those games are up near Auckland somewhere. You can find them if you want.
A lot of kids down there, I mean, with connections to you guys.
That's right, and they're scoring goals. I mean, they're playing some of these players in positions that we didn't play, and they got Winton up front.
Winton.
Yeah.
They should put him up front, yeah.
He'd probably go all right.
Yeah. Another guy's Neshu up front, yeah. And I don't think Tam's not getting too much of a run yet. Did he play at the weekend?
No.
And Matt Redenton, he scored as well, didn't he?
And you guys have had Clayton Lewis at one stage, and have had
Andrew Blake.
Noah Billingsley play for you guys in Taupo.
Yep, he did.
Anyway, so that's good to see. Plenty of alignment of a type, anyway. The Chatham Cup is the other big thing happening around at the moment. There were heaps of results in the northern region that I'm not going to bother with because they're pretty meaningless. Well, obviously meaningful to the teams they've played. Pretty meaningless to me. In the central region, we'll focus on a couple of games, but the round was Palmerston North End beat Brooklyn North United 4-1. Inglewood lost to Red Sox Manawatu 6-0. Island Bay snuck past 9-9 News.
Late too.
Island
Bay tweeted that they were all over us, and it was a miracle they didn't score more, whereas the 9-0 story is we defended well. I didn't see it because it was at the exact same time as a team I'm involved in was playing. But apparently the boys were pretty happy with how they went.
Yeah, good. Seatoon lost at home to Havelock North Wanderers 3-0. Stokes Valley lost at home to Wellington Olympic 4-1. Tarwa beat Cavity Coast United comfortably with a 4-0 win there. Dale's cheering in the background. Victoria University beat Wainui Mata away 2-0. That was possibly a banana skin for them, so good work, the uni kids. Wairarapa United beat Miramar Rangers 3-1, which is kind of interesting, I suppose. Miramar Rangers still haven't quite found their stride this season.
I think they've got to be concerned that their stride may be completely lost.
And Waterside Karori had a two-all ordinary time draw with Petone. I believe that was off the back of two Petone own goals that got Wharfies back into it. They then went on to win 5-3. Petone went on to win 5-3 on pens. New Plymouth Rangers beat Whanganui City 6-0 in a game that no one here cares about. And the two games we can actually talk about with some coherence was the Hutt Derby, Lower Hutt City versus Upper Hutt City. You guys were at this, and from what I can tell, it was awesome.
Awful?
Yeah. Oh, wrong A word. Oh, my bad.
Finish that word slot. You're wrong. Yeah, Upper Hutt probably slightly the better side in the game. They had two very good chances to score and butchered both of them. Lower Hutt had a couple of half chances, and as it was looked destined to go to extra time, Lower Hutt popped up to score a winner with maybe 3 or 4 minutes to go. They were very, very happy by that, and I think Fozzie was
a bit disappointed.
Yeah, he was. He's got quite angry on the touchline there at stages. Yeah,
that is Fozzie style. Pedro, fantastic in the middle of the park for Upper Hutt, just harassing players. Gorgeous vision. You know, he was the best player on the pitch by a margin, and he's 110. So,
KG or H?
Both. Lower Hutt are Lower Hutt battling a wee bit, aren't they?
It is perhaps a bit of an indictment on where some of those Central League teams are at. That Upper Hutt are struggling in Cap Prem. Were so competitive with them, and that the best player on the park was, by a significant margin, the oldest man on the park.
Yeah, I think the oldest man on the touchline, still, I think he's older than both Foz and Lloyd O'Keefe. It'd be interesting to see how Fozzie goes at Upper Hutt now. I mean, it's only his second game in charge. Whether he's got enough time left to turn them around and save them from the KFC.
I think they look pretty good. If they play like that, based on having seen 2 or 3 Cap Prem games this season, then they'll find points.
Yeah, they'll be disappointed, I would imagine, not to beat Lower Hutt, but in saying that, it's probably best for them now just to focus on not getting relegated. Yeah. Lower Hutt now have to play Petone in another Hutt derby in the next round of the Cup. The other game that we can talk about, because Domi's still crowing about it, is Wellington United, Miramar, what are they called? Wellington United, Wellington Phoenix United Academy Football Product FC had a comprehensive win over North Wellington ANZ United 6-1.
Yeah, I got there at halftime. There was only two. They were 2-1 up, but apparently North Wellington had a couple of chances in the first half they didn't take. But in the second half, the young boys just walked away from them. And I got there, it was 2 minutes in the second half. Ben Stroud scored from a corner from a header. Good finish. He
belongs in the wrong club.
He's a fair salmon.
I know. That's right. I mean, he's a good prospect. And, you know, you're talking about big centre backs coming through the system. He's not a bad one there.
Are you trying to tell us something?
I don't know, am I?
I don't know. He
might be a bit young.
He's not welcome in the first team if he can score from a corner.
Well, here's another one. James McGarry got a penalty, so there's no way he's getting a contract. Who else do they have? So, no, I mean, once the second half, they got underway. They really dominated. You saw the fitness was starting to come through. And they just, I mean, Logan Rogerson and Supri, seeing these kids were just brought in. I mean, they're just a joy to watch. And they were, you know, the good thing about them is they don't get cocky and start doing tricky stuff for the sake of doing tricky stuff. They get sort of, they're just confident. They push the ball around, and the way they link up, you know, McGarry's Singh, you know, Joe Bell, Rory Cavill-Fleury came on. He's only a slow kid, and he was, you know, they don't seem fazed at all by playing.
Rory Cavill-Fleury, to be fair, has been playing Cap Prem for 3 years now.
And he was been playing HSB Premiership as well. Mm. I mean, you know, he's not a big lad.
No. They are great to watch, and it is good to see. Yeah. You guys just need to get around to actually officially calling them the Phoenix instead of trying to pretend they're Wellington United. Anyway, good win for them. Do you know who they play next round?
They play Western Suburbs.
Oh, yeah. Academy Derby. The academies. Yeah. Brilliant. That'll be good fun.
So, yeah, that's a big game. It's a big game. And that'll be a real benchmark to see.
Where will you play?
I think it's
your home game.
I think it's United home ground. So it would have to probably be Wakefield. Because the other one's out for the World Cup. Yeah. So, good question, actually. Oh, I guess it's only Wakefield, yeah.
Yeah. No good officials. Very good.
Just on that subject, do you know what they're going to do for the weeks that they've got players away in the under-17s and the under-20s?
Yeah. Are you going to play? You, Schmitty?
Gilly's tearing his hair out. One of the games is against Island Bay, and he's trying to get it rescheduled. So we're not playing on when we're missing 10 players. But Island Bay don't want to move it because
Why would they?
Well, I guess that's right. They say players can't play midweek. So they don't have players can play midweek. So I don't know what they're going to do. We're going to have to, get ring-ins or something. Maybe we'll drop down pro players.
Second team. Just get the reserves up.
Wellington United reserves.
You are Wellington United, aren't you?
That team
that's last in Cap 1.
Yeah. Get them in. Put a Phoenix shirt on them. Get them in there. Be hilarious.
Put the Courtney Arms out.
Yeah. I think most of them are dead. drank themselves into a stupor and died.
Dear me. Anyway, and in the southern region, Kashmir Tech just scraped through against Western AFC. Though you were saying they scored in the last minute of ordinary time.
Yeah, I was following this on Twitter, I think. They were down 10 men, losing 2-1 with a couple of minutes to go. Snuck up, got an equaliser and pushed on through to win the first round. So the champions get survived
just
blowing out in the first round. Yeah.
Lucky stuff. All right, very good. That's pretty much all we've got for Chatham Cup time. I haven't got the draw here for the next round. Was there anything else that stuck out for anyone else? Sounds like there are a couple of big matchups in the other regions, and we'll try and bring you a bit more of an update of the draw in the in next week's final podcast. I love you guys. Anyway, but for now, I don't think we've got anything else to talk about. Dame, you got any final message for the fans from the season?
No, I mean,
and we'll just leave it there.
You've been adequate.
That's right. Look, I think it's certainly a disappointing season. Everyone's really disappointed the way it sort of fizzled out to a damn squib at the end. But you know, if someone had said, "Would you take fourth or so of the season?" You know, probably would have bitten their arm off. But everyone, you know, in the club, the players, is disappointed with how we didn't kick on, and that's what he's very keen to redress next year, and so we don't get to that same stage again.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Domi, for joining us again in the pod. You've been a pretty pod regular, so it's always nice to have you on board.
Always a pleasure.
You look forward to not having to get asked anymore.
Well, I said to hang up the mics. When are they starting up again? I thought they'd already finished, to be honest.
Regular listener then, obviously. I think you'll be able to take up the spot on Patrick's Under 20 World Cup podcast. Is it Patrick and Brandon and someone else?
Cam. Yeah.
Bevan? Oh, Cam.
Kevin's cat.
Good on them for picking up the mics and carrying on. It'll be good fun. But for us, for now, it's a fond cheerio.